My entire fight is with a man in a green suit. A tall man in a green suit with his head covered. I mean, it looks ridiculous. You know, you have things on strings that people are pulling and they're trying to hide from the camera. Like, nothing looks as scary as it looks in the movie. When I saw the film, it was mostly me going, oh my God, that worked. Oh my God, that's amazing. Like, oh my God, that really actually is scary. Because at the time, it doesn't feel very scary at all.
That was Elizabeth Moss talking about her role in the new remake of the old movie, The Invisible Man, which starred Bill Bregoli, the original.
Claude Rains.
Claude Rains, that's absolutely
right. I saw right through it. Sorry.
Well, we'll tell you if The Invisible Man is a must-see or not.
And, get it?
That's Bill McCuddy, who you hear chiming in as usual, in the background. We'll also talk about this new movie with Steve Coogan called Greed, which is kind of a parody of the uber wealthy. We'll talk about a movie that Bill Bregoli saw called Wendy, which is Wendy from the Peter Pan the character from Peter Pan.
Not Dave Thomas's, not the Square Hamburgers.
And I saw last night the new revival of West Side Story on Broadway, and I will be reviewing that. But let's start
and
out.
Our little television show got an Emmy nomination.
That's correct.
We can talk about
Talking
that.
Talking Pictures, our TV show, got an Emmy nomination
this
year.
The bar is so low this year.
And Talking How low Pictures is it? With Talking Pictures with Bill
Rosenstein.
McCuddy and Lisa Rossman and Justine Browning will be on CUNY TV this weekend and on PBS All Arts next weekend. Check your local listings. And we're going to be reviewing lots of movies and looking at stand-up comedy movies as well, which comes off of
still
the Billy
heart.
Crystal Standing Up, Falling Down. Did we do
Fire
Standing
Up the
up,
DVR.
Falling? Did we do Standing Up, Falling Down last week? I think
yes,
we did.
Yes, we did. Right, okay. We've done it
now
six
Now you can
times.
Watch it on TV. Okay, anyway, Invisible Man. Here we go. All right, so take it away, Bill McCuddy. Go ahead.
Elizabeth Moss from Mad Men is an abused... Is she a girlfriend or wife of this guy?
You know, I said on the TV show, I said wife... And
it's not really made clear.
Clear.
He's an uber rich guy who's developed some kind of an experiment, should I say how he's invisible? Maybe I'll let
that's okay.
Maybe I'll let you discover that because it's kind of clever.
He's developed some kind of
he's a rich guy,
cloaking device.
Everyone thinks he's dead. She was happy when he died, and all of a sudden, some strange things start happening to her. And some people around her that convince people, and this is the one clever thing about this new version, because she is doing things or being manipulated into doing things by someone who is invisible, people think she's gone a little crazy and don't believe, obviously, that she's being stalked by an invisible man. It has a very Me Too kind of contemporary feel. It looks good. But some of the special effects of her being thrown around a kitchen, for example, were kind of laughable to me and
not
suspenseful.
And Bill Bregoli told me that she's fighting somebody in
blue suit.
Right. To me, it looked like she was just writhing around on the floor, you know, going, okay, pretend you're being choked, pretend you're being dragged around. And she was just kind of doing like an acting exercise in class. But now I learned before we started recording
she
today.
She says that in the beginning of the show.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, she told us that.
She did tell us that. Well, I don't hear the sound bites.
Yes,
Bill Bregoli explains.
People are very aware of that, I think.
Yeah, okay. Well, now
there's a lot of this show you don't hear.
They certainly are. But it looked like to me, yes, when Bill McCuddy and I sat together during this film, and he said to me, you know, we were both really bored, like the first 40 minutes or so of the film, at least a half an hour. And then something happens halfway through. And
that I don't think we should give away.
No,
but
no,
it does involve something that this invisible person is doing, and it definitely incriminates or makes everyone think this woman is Elizabeth Moss crazy or...
Well, they're gaslighting her, which if you remember the old movie Gaslight, you know, the husband was doing something to the wife that only the wife was aware of and nobody else was aware of, and the wife was made to look like she was crazy, and everybody goes like, you know, it would be like if you moved something on a table from one end to the other and nobody... She watched him do it, and nobody else heard him. That object just moved, and the audience sees it, and she sees it.
I had a co-host who I will not name who accused me in a meeting of gas-stoving her.
Gas-stoving?
That was gas-stoving me.
Well, anyway, you know, I say that if, you know, as, again, I'm saying what I said on the show, on the TV show, but, you know, there's good trash that's really entertaining to watch, and there's really unwatchable, horrible trash to watch. And this is entertaining trash. I mean, you know, like, there's a TV show that I watched the first season of, which is good, the second isn't, called You, with Penn Badgley from Gossip Girl. And, you know, it's a trashy, stupid show, but it's really fun and entertaining to watch, at least the first season. And Invisible Man is... it's entertaining.
I mean, there's no harm, no foul here. It's definitely, I guess, in that way, we're recommending it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's very little to see if you haven't caught up with all the Oscar-nominated films at this point. The studios don't really release their quality, their real top-grade stuff. You know, they're waiting for the summer to do the summer releases, which now starts in April. And, you know,
this could have been a summer movie very easily. In fact, it might have done a little better.
I found it fun. I mean, you know, once that, which we won't give it away, that once that incident where you go, now it's going to get interesting, takes place, and it does get, you know, more involving. Yeah, I mean, it takes very little thought. You know, it's entertaining when everybody thinks she's nuts, you know, because you know, the guy's doing things invisibly and she's seeing what he's doing, and she's telling people, no, it's my ex. He's doing it. He's not dead. He's invisible. And everybody's looking at her like she's out of her mind, which is the common reaction you would have, you know, but you as the audience know that she's not crazy, which is typical gaslight kind of thing. Yeah, it's fun. I enjoyed it. You know?
Well, you kept turning to me and going, is she crazy or is there an invisible guy? And I had to keep explaining it to you. But no, I would say it's worth seeing. Have we convinced Bill Bregoli to see it?
Yeah, actually. I think I'd be interested.
It's a fun B movie. If you accept it for the junk style theatrics and style for what it
fine.
Is,
I've seen
you
worse,
will have
probably.
A fun time.
We should mention, by the way, also on most streaming platforms right now, and I still haven't seen it, but people are very divided about it, Elizabeth Moss's Her Smell, where she plays a punk rocker.
Well, I saw the first 20 minutes of that, actually. They showed one of these things where they show you, they invite you and they show you like the first 15 minutes or 20 minutes.
And then they ask you to leave because you're Neil Rosen?
Well, they only showed you that. This was like a year ago, when, uh-huh. you know, and it looked terrible. And then apparently, I got invited to their premiere party, and they said, oh, please stop by. And I said, I haven't seen the film. They go, oh, come by. And this was during award season, you know, when we were So I went by, and people were saying that most people don't make it through the first 20, 25 minutes of the film, that they walk out when they screen this for people, which is very odd that they showed us the first 20 minutes of the film, because it's incomprehensible. She's just completely, like, spaced out on drugs. There's loud punk music playing, and she's just walking around going, ah,
well, that sounds terrible, but I'm telling you that lots of people
love
it.
Apparently, after that, she turns her life around, and it becomes an interesting movie, but most people can't get past that beginning. So, I don't know. I think that Last Thing on Invisible
this
Man...
This simple aside turned into a 20-minute conversation.
The last
brought
thing
to you by LaCroix.
On Invisible Man is that... she is doing a variant on the Handmaid's Tale character. I mean, in the beginning of The Invisible Man, she's just trying to escape, as well as when he's invisible, from the clutches of this guy, and she's running around trying to get... And that's in a different setting. That's Handmaid's Tale. She's being abused, and she's, you know, trying to get away. So, you know, maybe Elizabeth Moss, other than Her Smell, which is a different character, should be just doing some different stuff.
Don't bring Her Smell into this.
Anyway, okay, so let's move on. And Bill Bregoli is going to tell us about a movie called Wendy.
That's right, which you guys apparently know nothing about. But it was made by a guy named Ben Zietlin. And in 2012, he had an Oscar-nominated picture called Beasts of the Southern Wild.
So that was a Fox Searchlight movie.
That's right, and this one is too. Only this time, they gave him about $6 million to make it. Yeah. And he went out and did the same thing. Got a bunch of little kids and set them loose. If you could imagine Terrence Malick making Our Gang.
Oh, God. What a great visual.
That's kind of what that is.
I can't imagine that, and I don't want to.
Yeah, you might not want to. But she runs off with her brothers. They live in this little town down south.
I'm trying to envision Terrence Malick doing, it's alfalfa. That's alfalfa, I would say.
That's kind of what this is. There's a voiceover that would drive you nuts. Gorgeous photography.
Well, wait a minute. Do they have to get permission to do the Wendy character from Peter Pan?
I don't know if they had permission from the Barry Estate, which is
I would think
you'd
have to,
through.
And I would think that would make it more
They're
expensive than a $6
million
movie.
They're not calling it the Peter Pan
movie.
Story, and it isn't really like Peter Pan, Tinker Bell is a sea creature, like a sea monster. Whoa. There is a Captain Hook kind of twist. It's more like a reimagining of Peter Pan. They're not doing Peter Pan and just calling it Wendy.
So who's okay. Peter Pan?
There's a boy that they meet up on.
But he's not really intricately involved in the plot.
Oh, he's intricately. He's the one they kind of follow around. But
I'm guessing nobody can fly. I'm guessing
nobody can fly.
Right. It's not. So it's based in some kind of reality. Is it
sort of? But it was
shot in an urban setting.
No, it's set in. It was shot, which is why some of those millions of dollars came from. It's on some, I think, Caribbean islands. He found some islands, some deserted islands, and put the kids on there. And the middle of the film is just watching kids run around.
Like the Florida Project?
It's really, yeah, kind of like that, only they only interact with other kids.
Any good performances?
Devin France is interesting as Wendy. Her name is Devin. And that's about it. I mean, there's not a whole lot to recommend. It's an interesting exercise in style.
I don't know this actress. Is she African-American?
She's never
worked before. Okay.
And she has no future work, according to IMDb.
So basically...
And they're not minority? I mean,
There are some minority kids, and some people are
what town is this set in? I'm sorry.
It's not set in a town.
It's nowhere.
It's like
nowhere
in the USA. Caribbean. It's down south USA.
Okay.
It's somewhere where there are railroad tracks, because these kids hop on freight trains at one point.
This sounds nothing like Peter Pan, as you said.
They're kids, and they don't want to grow up. And there's a lot of talk about not wanting to grow up.
But is it like in Peter Pan, they're actually able... Peter Pan freezes time where they don't grow.
No, they're not freezing time. Time's moving on.
Or Peter Pan. I'm sorry. Peter Pan doesn't grow up.
Right.
The kids do grow up, but that's the
there's
end of
nothing
the,
like
that's
that.
The end of
there's,
the show.
Yeah, there's no time
the
shifting. These kids are getting older.
Right, Peter Pan comes back, and then they're older, and I remember. Yeah.
So did you enjoy this on any level?
I enjoyed it for a little while, and then it gets so dull in the middle. And then the ending is actually, it wraps everything up very nicely. But supposedly, Mr. Zeitlin fired his first editor. He spent years in post-production. Remember, he started this in 2012.
Special effects in this thing?
No, but he basically let the kids run around and tried to craft a story around it.
So the story is
kind of like Terrence Malick.
Yeah,
again,
I get
that's
it. Right.
So they're like
organic.
Poor kids
organic.
Down south that are hopping freight trains.
Right. And then they end up on an island and they run around and somebody almost loses an arm.
Is there a crocodile?
There's no crocodile. But there is a boat.
There are boats.
A
crocodile with a clock in its stomach?
Something like
that. There are
that.
Boats.
And you said, I heard you earlier, something that there is a Captain Hook, but it's not.
It's a twist on the Captain Hook, yeah.
Does he have one arm and a hook?
Not quite, but
well,
it's weird,
okay,
and so I'm not going to ask you if you're
game,
running around.
I'm not interested.
I don't need to see this.
No, don't. Okay. It'll probably.
I mean, I would have been interested in seeing the follow up to that film because I thought that filmmaker had shown a lot of promise, and obviously this has been in turnaround or development and.
He's been in the editing room
time,
for 2 years. Fired his first editor and had to get another one.
Well, at
probably
one point,
wore him out.
At one, you're not interested either, right?
No.
Okay. So at one point, I don't know the genesis of what came first, whether it was the Disney cartoon or whatever, but Peter Pan was a very hit Broadway musical.
Smoke 'em if you got 'em. This is going to be a long
Broadway
story.
Broadway musical. And this sounds like a really crappy interpretation of Peter Pan, what you're telling me. And talking about lousy interpretations of Broadway shows...
Oh, look at that miraculous segue.
I thought this was going to be an aside, Bill.
Wow.
I saw.
Is my face beat red?
It's a transition.
Wow. When you're a pro, you're a pro for life.
There you go. So there's a new version of West Side Story on Broadway at the Broadway Theater, right next door to the Ed Sullivan Theater, where they do the late show with Stephen Colbert. And... yeah, they said leave your expectations or your preconceived notions, I read before I saw this, of West Side Story at the door before you see this, because this is a complete reimagining of West Side Story, which sounds like, if done properly, is not a bad idea, because West Side Story took place in the, I think, 1957.
And Steven Spielberg is doing basically a faithful redo of that version.
Right.
So,
which will come out this fall.
Christmas?
Or when,
yeah, I think so.
Right. And
so in a perfect world, this would be helping that, but doesn't sound like
it's
going.
So this is done by a director by the name of Ivo Van Ho, who is, I believe, a Swedish director.
From a long line of hoes.
And There is no set. It's a giant video screen which spans the entire length of the stage and the entire height of the stage. And you don't really know where to look. I mean, the dancers are on stage dancing, and there'd be like a Busby Berkeley, June Taylor dancer overhead camera with the dancers.
Right.
And there's like tons of cameras to do this thing. And during the dance, or even sometimes during dialogue, it's like, do I watch the movie that's unfolding, which is a close-up of the... It's kind of like when you go to a rock concert, you know? Do I look at the stage?
Right.
Or do I look at the video screens that are...
Except in this case, the video screen is behind what's happening on stage, right?
Yes, correct. And sometimes it's a street scene, like they'll put like a moving... Like they'll be... The cast will be standing still, but yet... They don't even pretend they're walking. It's like.
So are there cameramen on the stage,
too?
No, the
cameras are concealed. You can't see the cameramen. At one point, one of the cast members does walk on stage holding with a handheld camera. But generally speaking, for 95% of the thing, you can't see the cameras. But you don't really know where to look. But that said, okay.
And there's no, I heard there's no.
There's no snapping.
Snapping.
Boy.
Oh,
boy.
What the crazy, hell?
Which I started snapping. I actually started snapping.
Is there an Officer Krupke?
What?
You snapped.
Is there an
in
Officer Krupke?
Yeah, this is what doesn't work. Here's the problem with this whole thing. First of all, they've tried to make this thing contemporary, which is...
Meaning literally set like in this time period, yes. Like 2020?
Is there rapping?
They have...
do they rap?
The cast members have tattoos, face tattoos, and they're dressed in contemporary clothing. And the street scenes that are going on the giant...
How would you
video...
know contemporary clothing if you saw it?
Well, you know, just walk outside and you'll see people with... I mean, they're not dressed in the way the... Jets and the Sharks were dressed. I mean, they're dressed in, you know...
Are they called Jets and Sharks?
Yeah, let me get to that. They are called Jets and Sharks, but they're walking around, and... I'm sorry, now I lost my train of thought. Where was I?
Officer Krupke.
Whoever knows.
Well, Officer Krupke. Yes, okay, so it's 19... If you're going to make something... Yes, there's the street scenes that are behind them are not... the city streets from the 1950s.
Right.
They're subway, you know, cars that are contemporary and, you know, and they're in the bad section of the way Upper West Side, you know, and it's all...
Section?
What's the bad section of the
way
Upper West
Side? All the way upper, I guess. Yeah, I don't know if there is one now, you know, anymore, but...
Hudson?
Well, who knows? But the thing is, what's Dobbs crazy
Ferry?
Is... Okay, first of all, the Jets, in the original, the Jets were... a white gang, and the Sharks were a Puerto Rican gang.
Right.
Okay. In this version, the Jets are a combination of black, white, and other races that were born in America. And they're against the Latin group, the Puerto Rican group, who they refer to in the original text. They keep referring to them as PRs. I don't know that anybody is using that those PRs. So you're using the original text of, you know, the cast are saying like they look contemporary. They're going like, you know, daddy-o. They actually say daddy-o and can you dig? And you know, you're seeing this like gang of guys that look like it's like the Crips or the Bloods, and they're saying daddy-o and dig it. And let's go to the we'll meet at the big dance today at the high school. You know, and you just,
so is that the point though, that there are no gangs anymore?
No, there's two gangs.
I understand, but it is a meta. Is it like any kind of
it doesn't work in the modern setting?
Right.
It doesn't. It look, you either do what Spielberg is doing or what the last revival, which I didn't see, is it's just you set it in 1957 and then it makes sense. Or what they're doing, if you're going to make it a new contemporary version, I mean, it just didn't make sense that these
one of the knocks I heard is that the gangs are kind of homogenous, and they're because it's so politically correct, everybody, you can't tell the Jets from the Sharks.
No, you can't. When they're having the rumble scene, you can't tell who's fighting who. There's absolutely no. First of all, the guy who played the guy who plays Tony, Isaac Powell, he's a great voice, but the one who plays Maria, Shireen Pimentel, as my wife said, she was like singing opera. She has too much of like an operatic voice. They cut the I Feel Pretty number. No big loss there.
There's a couple of numbers they cut, didn't they?
There's no intermission. It's an hour and 45 straight through. It's a mess. It just doesn't work.
Well, we should point out to people, we're talking about this because obviously the Spielberg movie is coming too if you're not in the New York area, but also that This was in previews for a lot longer than most Broadway
shows. They
say
it bombed in New Haven. They didn't try it out of town. They tried it,
but it's been running here for 2 months before it opened the other night. And you'd think normally, because this has happened before, when you have that kind of a gestation period, they would fix the problems, but they apparently haven't fixed any of them.
No, they haven't fixed any of them.
The Wall Street Journal called it Worst Side Story. Was their headline?
Yeah, it's you know, when they sing, and I'm not trying to be funny. That's your job, McCuddy. But when they were singing,
to be funny?
Tonight won't be like any. I was saying tonight is not the night or any night of the run of this thing. It's just.
And was that the sense when it was all over, when you were walking out? And people love coming up to you and saying, "How many apples, Mr. Rosen?"
Now we just ditched out of there.
Yeah,
don't you? You weren't getting. Look, I've been in gone to a lot of Broadway shows and. There's that obligatory standing ovation, no matter how bad the play is. But this was kind of like a half-assed one. I mean, you know, people just, the cast cut up, you know, they came out. I don't see, look, it was a press night, you know, post-opening press night. So they papered the house with some, you know, friends and family, I guess, of the show. Because okay. They some people that were applauding wildly. But this was not.
You still haven't told me about Officer Krupke.
Oh, yeah. So the Officer Krupke thing, that. First of all, I don't like the actor who plays Officer Krupke or the lieutenant who's the detective who's playing their boss. It just doesn't fit in a contemporary setting. I mean, set it in the 50s, or if you're going to change it, then make it contemporary. But don't have people look like it's 2020.
I wish you could all be here
and then
right now,
they're
those
going
of you listening, because Neil is flailing his arms
dance
like
is great,
crazy.
You know, and like,
he's
and
so disturbed by all this. His arms are flailing, his hands are on his head.
Getting red in the face,
it doesn't work.
Then
yeah.
There's scenes that you can't see.
About his blood pressure.
There's a doc's pharmacy where they hang out, and then there's the...
Doc's?
There's the little...
Shouldn't be a Duane Reade?
Yeah, well, I don't know. And then there's the, not sweatshop, but it's kind of like a little... shop where the Puerto Rican
horrors?
Women make dresses and stuff, and you can't really there's so many lights to illuminate that scene, both of those little sets. You have to watch the movie, so it's like I'm watching a movie,
and not a good movie.
No, the whole thing just my wife didn't like it, I didn't like it, and apparently the New York Times didn't like it, and
it's having a rough go of it.
I wonder how long this run will go, but. You know, it's just, I didn't like it. All right, moving on. Okay, let's talk about a movie starring Steve Coogan, who it's a satire on the wealthy called Greed. McCuddy?
Again, I'm describing this movie? Okay.
I'll describe. Well, I just described most of the story. So
all right.
You're a big Steve Coogan fan. Go ahead.
It's a wealthy schmata. Am I saying that right?
Schmata? Schmata is like an old garment.
Yeah. Well, so it's a wealthy garment guy. He's a wealthy
clothing manufacturer.
Or he actually prefers
like
making the
designer.
Deals.
Schmata is a low-end fabric.
Well, he's got low-end stores. Did you watch the movie?
Yes, I did.
So he's made his bones by opening like H&M kind of quality down and dirty stores. And... takes over companies, runs them into the ground, and then moves on. And this all takes place in England, where he is considered a big kind of low-grade, like Sir Lou Grade, low-grade businessman, but very, very, very wealthy. Throwing himself his 60th or 65th birthday.
It's a 60th party.
60th birthday on a Greek island in a gorgeous... This, by the way, also directed by Michael Winterbottom, who Steve Coogan has a relationship with, going back to 24-Hour Party People, and then all of those road movies where the documentaries where they go through Italy and England and with Rob Brydon, and those are so great. The next one of those, no kidding, is going to be in Greece. That's coming out. So obviously this is a movie they shot at the same time because it's at a Greek resort. His family is there. He used to be married to Elsa,
Isla Fisher.
And she's there. He's got a new girlfriend. His family is there. Nobody particularly likes him. And he quotes Gladiator all the time. So they have built for him at this party a small version of the Forum. And
well,
the Colosseum.
Complete with
a real lion.
Right.
So that's where hilarity ensues.
Well,
it reminded me a great deal. I don't know if either one of you ever saw an Altman movie a long time ago called Health, which took place at a big Florida kind
of resort. Yeah.
And had a lot of storylines going on. This is very similar to that, not quite as good. I like it in places and don't like it in others. And then at the very end, it talks about sweatshops and how little women are paid around the world. And that's supposed to be the point
of this
movie.
Well, the best part of the movie to me is the end credits, where it says that...
well, that's what I was just describing.
Yes, that 28... It was either 26 or 28 people of the wealthiest people in the world cumulatively have more money than 3.8 billion of the poorest people in the world, who, as McCuddy says on the TV show Talking Pictures, which is on CUNY TV this weekend and PBS All Arts next weekend,
that
it's on the, off the backs of, you said, off the backs of those 3.8 billion
people. Yeah, and that's a great point to make in a different movie. This movie is trying to be kind of a broad comedic look.
Well, the problem is,
and a dark satire, and it kind of fails on those.
It's trying to have it both ways. It's trying to be, as you said, satirical, and it's also trying to be a message movie to talk about the 1% or the 1% of the 1% with the excesses of that, and make some statements. And it's a hard, tight rope to walk to have it both ways, and it could be done, but apparently this movie doesn't do it because it's not that funny. And there's a scene. They want the beach cleared of these, Middle East.
Homeless. They're immigrants. They're in Greece, which is true. I guess a lot of immigrants have come over.
Are they Middle Eastern immigrants or something? Or he wants them off the beach because he wants the peasants off the beach.
Yeah.
He's a con man. I mean, he's not a nice guy. The protagonist here, if you want to call Steve Coogan the protagonist, you're not rooting for the guy. There's flashbacks of him as a bully in back in high school or college.
Well, he always plays an insufferable prick, except when he was in Stan and Ollie last year with
John C. Reilly.
John C. Reilly, and he made one other that he co-wrote called Philomena.
Well, I think he wasn't a prick there. And in the Alan Partridge movies, he's kind of like,
well, he's kind of an asshole.
You
kind of
like him to an extent. Yeah, you don't like this.
Listen, I've been pulling for this guy for the last 15 years. He was sort of funny in Tropic Thunder, and they blew him up like early on in that movie.
Well, the thing is, this guy in this movie is not likable, and you're just kind of disgusted by his wealth, and
which is supposed to be the point. But are some funny scenes.
He gets these people, so he doesn't want. He's a con man. I mean, he doesn't want these immigrants on the beach to ruin the view of the guests at his party. So he plays a three card Monty game literally pulls out his deck and does three card Monty. And he says, if I win, you'll work for me. So they become servants at the party wearing these Roman togas and stuff like that, you know? And, he's just he's a prick, you know? And, I don't know. So I don't think the comedy works that well, but it's not terrible. And I don't think the serious aspects of the movie.
There are some laugh out loud moments, especially when they're putting the party together and they want famous people there and they can't afford them. And so they can't afford them. But then when stuff starts happening bad to this guy, a lot of people start canceling, including Keith Richards. And so they hire lookalikes and their casting of the lookalikes is a funny scene.
Something's missing.
Should have been better.
Something's missing in this movie. And, I think that, It just doesn't really. I mean, is it watchable? Yeah, I mean, it's watchable, but it's not like something that I'd go run out and see.
To paraphrase Gordon Gekko, in this case, greed is not good.
There you go. Anyway, moving on. Bill McCuddy is a big 007 guy, and
the next trailer. There've been three now, and this one has a nice little.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to say I wanted to make the point that
more about something we've already talked about. I hope so.
That if you want to see a really brilliant look at a parody and look into the lives of these uber wealthy people, Succession on HBO is really the way to go.
Yeah, that's what they tell me.
Because that's brilliant. And it's two seasons. You can binge watch it. And it's fucking brilliant. And
okay.
Your friend just won the... Didn't Brian Cox just win...
No, he's always winning something.
Won the Golden Globe or the Emmy.
I heard him on a commercial the other day. Too.
All right, Gad, I'm sorry. 007.
Yeah, he's the voice of McDonald's. It's very unusual.
Really?
Yeah, Brian Cox.
Weird.
Yeah.
Wow.
Do you need the money?
He was the first Hannibal Lecter. A lot of people forget that.
I know that.
Okay, so here's the takedown. I like all James Bond movies. I know for sure that this is going to be Daniel Craig's last one. because I'm friends with a friend of his, and it just is.
Well, their advertising is, they're actually saying in the ad, it's like the last yeah. Daniel Craig 007 movie.
That
now
helps too.
Now he's going to do the Knives Out.
Maybe, if that becomes a franchise. Yeah. So, yeah, it's as Bergoglio told us before we started rolling, it's the longest Bond ever. The last one was like 2 hours and 30 minutes. This one,
2 hours and 43
tacks
minutes.
Tax another 10 minutes on that.
So what you do is you see the Irishman, and this will feel short.
Who plays Q? Who plays M?
I think Judy we still
Dench,
have Judy
still
Dench.
And Q?
Yeah, and we
John
got
Cleese.
We got in this new
Judy Dench died.
We got yeah, that's what I thought too. But I
in so the movie, she, not in real life.
Yeah, I know. Time. I mean, her character died. I thought M died, and then
so
then
it's Rafe, right?
Rafe.
It's Rafe Fiennes.
Yeah, it's Rafe. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. And what
and
about
Ben
Q?
Wishaw? Ben Wishaw
wasn't John Cleese Q?
No, Ben Wishaw.
No, when Ben is R now, he took Q's place. Ben
oh, okay.
So. Anyway, we got a little bit. We got a little more footage of the woman who is 007 at the beginning of this, the African American woman who gets his moniker, because we're told in this new trailer that he's been gone for 5 years,
which he has.
Yeah, so he's been sort of retired. He's coming back.
Yeah.
It's a different world, Mr. Bond, which they try and say every time that he's a dinosaur, but
and
this time they
a
really
joke
mean
about
it.
His good knee.
Yeah, and he's older.
Yeah, he has one knee. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Doesn't work, apparently. He's
the
old.
Action looks good. I've seen some of my favorite shots are include a flying motorcycle and then the Aston Martin that goes in a circle and, yeah. and shoots everybody. Look, I'm going to be there. It's one of the first that hasn't opened, I think, in a long time around Christmas. It's going to open in April. It's being shot on a large format,
yeah.
And it'll be simultaneously in IMAX. But a couple of things are happening. Here goes. A couple of things are coronavirus is having a problem with the Chinese premiere, which was going to happen in April. And so, and you know, we're learning now that maybe the Cannes Film Festival is going to get canceled.
Really?
Yeah.
There's talks of the Olympics getting canceled.
I guess my Bond music underneath you did not really.
It's fine.
Work.
It's
okay. Well, anyway, okay. Well, look. Who knows? I mean, this is a whole different discussion, and it is certainly not sitting around talking movies. But you know, the Olympics are in 5 months from now.
Well, the Berlinale is going on right now, what? Which is the very first film festival. The Berlinale in Berlin is going on right now, and right now over in Berlin, they're saying Cannes is not going to happen. And did you know why? Did you? I
they
never knew
canceled,
this.
Just canceled, by the way. I got an email. There's a New York Film Festival, one of the many, many festivals that happen in New York, that focuses on premier Chinese films. And I got an email yesterday that said that they are canceling. It's
well,
in
supposedly,
New York. It's in New
supposedly,
York. Not in China. But
supposedly,
they're canceling
a tremendous number of Chinese people buying and viewing come to the Cannes Film Festival, and so that's why they think the Cannes Film Festival is.
But you know,
canceled.
It's already. It's in northern Italy. They canceled this. Carnival thing or something yeah. like that, you know, so who knows where it'll be in three. I mean, right now it's concentrated in Japan and China, but you know, if it's another, I mean,
well, hopefully it's like SARS, which is overblown, and we'll be laughing about it a year from now, or we'll all be dead. So
yeah, well,
thanks
yeah.
for listening.
Well, the market went down today
as we're recording this.
Yes, as we're recording this, the market Niels. Closed down over 1,000 points again today.
All right.
So there you go.
The 500 you had in the market is now worth $300. Is that
500? Right? How about $10, my friend? Right. I have one share of anyway. So I know you're the biggest.
Trailer looks fine.
You're the biggest fan.
Trailer
of
looks fine.
That I know.
Kodak. What we also learned today is that Kodak is still in the movie business.
I'm amazed
still in the film
Kodak
business.
Is still in business. Period.
Yeah. Yeah. And that large format, as they're calling it, 65 millimeter, not quite 70. I don't know why they've
yes, I've never
it
heard
65.
Of that. You sent me an article.
65 millimeter, and also IMAX is everyone's doubling down on that because they're not. They're not willing to admit that Netflix is going to take over the world just yet.
No.
Well, let me say something.
Please.
Let me ask you a question. I'm actually going to ask you both a question.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
When I was a kid, they used to advertise in movies that, like, you could see The Towering Inferno in 70 millimeter, you know? And there was lots of things like the Poseidon Adventure in 70. It was an advertising thing that would be in the movie ad,
mm-hmm.
okay? Now, if 65 millimeter, which I've never heard, as you said, it's 35 and double is 70 millimeter. I've never heard of 65 millimeter before.
Well, there have been cutbacks, Neil.
Do audiences really notice? Because I remember going to the 70 millimeter film. I mean, IMAX, I could definitely tell a difference. I mean, the screen is like five stories tall, and you can see there's a difference. But, you know, if you go to the same movie theater, like where you grew up, and you go see the thing and it's in 70 millimeter, will an audience really notice the difference?
They don't know how to project stuff, but there is a difference. What's your TV? Is it a 1080p?
Yes.
Have you ever watched something really crummy on it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it usually looks fairly good, doesn't it?
Well, it bumps it up?
No, I think it's the opposite. I think if I watch something that's like, you know, an old rerun that's in 4:3 ratio as opposed to 16:9 and it was shot in the 60s or something like that, the imperfections of that actually because the TV is such high def that you could see actually when they first converted to high definition, they had to redo studios and stuff because little stains and stuff on sets, the high definition cameras would pick it up. So I think it's the opposite of that. I think that when I'm watching something, look, I could definitely tell a difference if I'm going to HBO or if I'm putting on a Blu-ray disc or if I'm watching something that's put on, 4K or something like that. I'm going, wow, this looks great. And if you look at something like a recent James Bond film or something, or something with incredible,
or Quentin Tarantino, who
international
still
locales
in 70
or stuff like that, and you go like, yeah, but if I see something that's filmed on a really shoestring budget and stuff, and or a long time ago, on my TV, I can see the imperfections much more noticeably. It doesn't.
Okay, but back to your original point, I think people will start to appreciate the difference, and I think that's what the studios are banking on, that there is a difference between the theater experience and what you can get at home, and they're intentionally saying, now we're going to shoot everything on big format if we can, because that'll make sure that people come.
Well, do you think that people can tell the difference, which is back to, I'm repeating my question, between a 35 millimeter projected film in a theater?
I think it depends on where they see it. Film? I think it depends on where they see it. The last time we all went to something that we all commented on that I recall was the Star Is Born. We all saw it the theaters shook, the chairs shook.
Sound.
But the screen was giant. Gigantic.
I mentioned this on the podcast in the past that I saw
it was like going to a concert.
Bohemian Rhapsody. First my wife and I saw A Star Is Born in a Dolby theater.
Yeah.
And then I saw alone without her Bohemian Rhapsody, and like you just said, Bill, both of those experiences I felt like I was in a concert hall. Seeing a concert.
Right.
It was the sound. It was more sound than the actual image.
Both.
When they started those songs in Bohemian Rhapsody, especially that concert they give at the end, was it Live Aid?
Yeah. Live Aid.
I mean, you felt like you were there. I mean, it was incredible.
Absolutely.
And in Star Is Born also, when she's performing with Bradley
Cooper. When he's doing any of his concerts. I think that's the
and
onus.
That's great.
I think that's the onus now on theaters to make them great instead of the crappy little mall cinemas we've been going to for years.
Yeah, but now you got the iPic theaters
seeing everything
and the Alamo
really
things and the, you know, you've got these dinner theater kind of experiences with the Barca Lounge or chairs and stuff. Is that driving? Let's go out and have the, you know.
Well, a friend of mine only goes to those now. There's one on the east side here in Manhattan
They're
that
all
serves
over the place.
Dinner. And it's $25 to get in, and he said it's not cheap to eat there, but he really enjoys it. It's all he goes to. Huh. Reg Brock, he's been a guest on this podcast.
All right,
podcast.
Well, we'll see if, I don't know that people are going to run to the theaters because it's
last thing I saw
millimeter.
Really big.
IMAX, I understand.
You might remember, IMAX watching the last Mission Impossible movie. Remember that?
Yeah.
In IMAX.
But you
know, huge.
Rigoli,
it looked really good.
What's interesting is, though, there are movies that they show in the IMAX theater that are not shot in IMAX. That it's
this
like you could
shot
like
big,
like
though.
You could see Avengers like in the regular way. You could see it in IMAX, and they're just basically putting it on that big IMAX screen.
Yeah, well, they shot parts of this.
The second Batman, Christopher Nolan one, whichever one that was called,
Dark Knight.
Dark Knight, I think, was the first one.
Son of the Dark Knight.
Well, it was the second one of the
Bright
three
Morning.
Movies.
That came after Dark Knight.
I saw that in IMAX, and what was interesting about that was some of the action scenes were shot in IMAX.
Yeah, well, that's
so,
the same deal.
And some of them were not. So when he's talking to Alfred the Butler, let's say, as Bruce Wayne, where there's a stagnant shot with him and Commissioner Gordon just speaking to each other.
Yeah.
it's not filling out the whole IMAX screen. All of a sudden, he gets in the Batmobile and he's chasing.
Yeah,
they've done that on a couple of movies. And all of a sudden,
the
thing
IMAX.
Blows up for you know right. the screen. All of a sudden, it fills out the whole screen for 5 minutes, and then it goes back to the, you know, where you get the you know, whatever.
I'll see anything in IMAX, whether it's blown up to be that size or not. I like that experience.
Well, what was
I
your first experience in IMAX? I mean, was it one of those National Geographic
Well, a
major
man
things?
Showed me his... No, I...
no, because they used to have those, like, the 20-minute, like, nature things, you know?
Yeah, and, no, I saw a movie about mail delivery.
Mail delivery,
and but it was biplanes. It was Jean-Jacques Annaud filmed it, and...
Oh, yeah. What was that called? I remember that.
Yeah.
And the other thing that was huge that I saw four times in Baltimore and in Washington, D.C., and I took people back to see it, was the Steel Wheels tour for the Rolling Stones was shot in IMAX, and it was only shown in IMAX theaters, like at midnight, and it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. But that's like in 1980. But you're right. For years, IMAX was...
IMAX would be the 20-minute, I don't know if it was nature actually film, National Geographic, but it was like the like NASA's Apollo thing or, you know, like a voyage to Antarctica or something. And
the penguins
like,
marched every year.
What do you call
year.
Those things that cut through the ships that cut through the ice cutter
ice
thing?
Icebreakers.
Yeah, right. And yeah so or an underwater thing where like they bring the IMAX cameras underwater and you're looking at like, and it was like there was really no plot to it, but it was like you just would be sitting there just like, oh my God, look how... magnificent this looks, and it was a 20-minute short film. But now, so there you go. All right, so Hunters.
Wow, that was almost too much podcast.
Well, no,
this
I want
week,
to talk about Hunters.
Oh,
you saw Hunters.
There's more.
So Al Pacino is a Nazi hunter with.
I don't know the kid's name. It's
a bunch of kids.
Yeah, it's a bunch of young people that.
And it takes place in like post World War II or like many years.
No, it's now. It's contemporary time.
Aren't they all? Or the Nazis, most of them?
You know, wait a minute. Hold on. We should look this up, because maybe it is like in the 70s
in the
or 80s. 80s. Yeah.
Yeah, it's in the 80s.
I don't think there's a lot of Nazis that were like, you know, still kicking around these days, you know?
You never know.
I didn't say all. I said I don't think there's a lot, you know?
You don't know what you see. It's what you not see. well, anyway, this is...
Marathon
this
Man was
a
was
big,
in the
80s, big deal.
You know?
Right. So this was a big... Is it safe? This was a big deal. To get Al Pacino to do a television show. And I have to say that I only made it about three quarters of the way through the first
episode. Really? I hear it stinks,
episode.
But I haven't
it has
seen
a
it.
Lot of flashbacks back to concentration camps and giant chess games with naked people. And
it's
then
never really
get,
happened.
When they get
Yes, that's one of the complaints that I hear is that they're taking a lot of license and inventing stuff that did not. So what you're saying...
Yeah, I don't think there were giant chess games where...
You're saying in a concentration camp for entertainment?
Yeah,
according
and they
to
would
this
shoot
thing,
the people that got captured by the... You know, if you were a pawn and you got captured,
I never
you got
heard
shot.
That. In,
yeah,
in,
well, yeah. I'm shocked it wasn't in the new West Side Story. Anyway, it was... It was kind of hard to get through, and Pacino, I should say, is underplaying. You know, he's not the hoo-ha guy, but he wasn't enough to stick around, in my opinion. So, Dylan Baker is in this thing too. It's very good,
Dylan Baker.
But yeah, it's. I apologize. It is in the late 70s, early 80s, as I'm recalling now, because there's a reference, I think, to Watergate. So anyway, I just wasn't that fascinated by it. So I'd be interested what. People listening thought if I should stay with it or go back to it for the second or third or fourth, because you know, Amazon spends money, you know, and this is obviously they did on this thing, but it's no marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah, well, there's so many similarities between the marvelous Mrs. Maisel and a Nazi hunter group, you know. But what, you know, so some comedian did this like a long time ago, and I can't figure it out either. It's such a, if you look at Pacino's voice, you know, which is everybody does these imitations of it.
Hoo-ha!
Yeah, and it's like, well, okay, we're going to, you know, and you hear him like in those 70s movies, you know, I'm in here with Sal in a bank, you know, in the Dog Day Afternoon, you know, and it's a completely different voice. I mean, it's like. It's,
well, he's almost 80 now.
Yeah, but
people
like,
get older.
Come on, we gotta get those Nazis. You know, and it's like,
yeah, somebody.
Frank, it's me. It's Frank Serpico. It's Frank.
Yeah.
You weren't paying attention here. They're looking at my badge. You know, it's like, wow. You know? Anyway.
I think it's pretty easy to assume why we're getting the older Pacino these days as opposed to the younger Pacino from 40
yes,
years
that's
ago.
That's true. What do we have next week, Bill Vergil?
Next week, The Way Back with Ben Affleck.
Oh, yes. And that looks good. And he directed that?
No, he did not.
No.
And we have the new Pixar movie, Onward.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Well, because they're advertising The Way Back is from the director of Argo and...
No, it's a different director.
What's the other movie you directed, Bill?
The big one?
Mystic River.
Gone Baby Gone.
So the trailer implies that he's not just in it. Yeah. And he's a football coach or some kind of basketball coach?
He's a basketball coach.
Okay.
And he drinks.
He's been giving a lot of interviews lately saying, you know, he's sorry he broke up with his wife. He's a drinker too. He thought he could drink around other people. Just wine with dinner became
alcoholic. And yeah. So is that going to be streaming or is it?
That's a real movie. You can go and see it and I'll tell you where and when after we shut the microphones off. Otherwise, everybody's going to come.
and the Pixar.
So there we go. We get two.
And what's the early word? Any word on the Pixar movie? Okay. It's no Up.
No.
It's no Wall-E.
No, definitely not Up.
I've heard there's a short that is in front of it.
Sure is good. Yeah, of course.
Okay. Well, what do we do here every week? We ramble on and listen to Neil's impressions.
And we hear some great impressions. We watch the bad movies and listen to the bad impressions so you don't have to.
That's true, we do. And you can watch, again, Talking Pictures, the television show, on CUNY TV this weekend and on PBS All Arts next weekend. And you can reach Bill Bergoli. Bill, so many people want to reach all of us.
I get one or two every week.
Do you really?
Yeah, I really do.
On Instagram, right?
Yeah.
What kind of pictures are you posting on Instagram? Right?
Lately, not much.
Okay.
Pictures of the invisible man.
World War II photographs of planes.
Yeah, surveillance photos.
Okay. And so you could at Bill Bergoli at Instagram, at Bill McCuddy on Twitter, at Neil Rosen Apples on Twitter. And as I always say, if you write something interesting or a good question or a good comment, we will discuss it on the show. And thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. We'll sit around talking movies again with you next week.